Welcome back to the Rookie Podcast. I'm your host, Tavi Gevinson, and today on the show, I'm talking to actress Winona Ryder. Yes, you heard that right.
I was trying so hard to get them to make like a sequel because my whole theory is like, it doesn't change. Yeah. And I was like, if there's Heathers out there in the real world.
And after that, writer Ashley C. Ford answers a question from a listener.
As a writer, it's not just your job to tell stories, it's your job to tell good stories.
But first, we have Ugoshi and Ogeshi Igonu teach us how to relearn your mother tongue in another installment of Life Skills. If you grew up hearing Spanish or Arabic or Japanese or any other language around the house as a kid but never picked it up, or you lost it as you grew up and you've been wanting to relearn it, now is the time. Ugoshi and Ogeshi are here to help you figure out where to start.
Dalunu, ahambu Ugochi Agonu.
Na ahambu Ogechi Agonu.
Hi, I'm Ugochi Agonu.
And I'm Ogechi Agonu.
And this is Life Skills, where we share tips on basically how to be a person.
Today, we're going to be talking about how to start the process of relearning your mother tongue.
Both of us are first-generation Nigerian-Americans who grew up speaking Igbo.
But as we went through American schools and hung out with American kids, we kind of learned that it wasn't cool to speak Igbo, and therefore we kind of like slowly forgot our language.
A lot of children of immigrants have this experience, and as they grow older, start to feel disconnected with their language, their culture, and their people.
Some kids might never have even learned the language that their family speaks, which can make you feel super ostracized at family events and other places where everyone speaks that language.
After going through all this, we decided that we wanted to relearn Igbo. At this point, neither of us are fluent, but we are, I don't know, like, if you speak slowly to us and, like, you know, yeah, we understand. We understand a lot, and we can speak some Igbo.
Yeah, we just kind of sound American.
Yeah.
And plus, it's hella cool to just be like, we're bilingual, so.
Yeah. So if you also find yourself wanting to relearn the language that your family speaks, here are a few things that we have done in order to start that process.
Nkembu.
Number one.
Just ask your parents to start speaking to you in that language more often.
It sounds super simple, but it really helps to pick up everyday vocabulary that you'll use often.
If you live at home, you can ask your family to have a dinner once a week where you only speak Spanish or Vietnamese or whatever language you're trying to learn.
And if you live away from your parents, it can be a lot harder to do this, but it's still possible.
Yeah, like when you call your family, try to speak with them in your language. It could be as simple as greeting them or asking them how they're doing in your language. Like with our mom, we don't say hi. We say like, ole, timaru, or kedu, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Even these small things can help you start to feel comfortable speaking that language. Yeah, speaking and hearing it, yeah.
Nkabo.
Number two. Find a community outside of your family where you can hear and speak your language.
If you have a group of friends that have the same background as you and speak your language, you can practice with them.
If your language isn't super common, like Igbo, that might be a little harder, but it's still possible to find a community.
For example, whenever we can, we try to go to this church that actually has the whole mass in Igbo. It's really great because since it's just Igbo, we get to sit down for a solid chunk of time and hear different dialects and connect to Igbo on a cultural and spiritual level.
Mm-hmm. It's also really cool because mass is the same like in every language, you know, I mean, like, in every, like, it's like the same order and everything. So since I go to mass often, like, I'll understand the order of things, you know?
Yeah. And then with that, like, context clues, you start to understand the language.
Yeah. Okay. Nkeato.
Tip number three.
Do not get discouraged. I hate to say it, but there are probably going to be people that will make fun of you for your limited language skills when you're just starting out.
It sucks and it's hella rude, but it's going to happen.
Yeah,
Ugochi has a story.
Yeah, I have a little story. Okay, so I remember one time this summer I had done this this prayer all in Igbo in church, and like I was so proud of myself. I bodied that prayer. I'm like, woo, go Jesus, woo, go Igbo. I'm like a Niger gal, you know what I mean?
Niger gal.
And then like, so I thought I'd killed it. But then once I got back to my seat, the priest started making jokes about how I was speaking Igbo or like basically speaking American Igbo with an American accent.
That was
American.
Clever though.
Like, it was clever, I'm not gonna lie. But it was in front of the whole church and it was hella embarrassing. And like now I can look back at it and like laugh and like that's so funny. But back then I was so angry and I was like, oh, I don't wanna even try to learn to speak Igbo. Nobody even like cares that I'm even trying. Like what? Like why am I doing this? Like they're all just gonna make fun of me. And like, that might happen, like, not specific, like, example, but, like, you might have a feeling where you're, like, why am I even trying if they're just going to make fun of me, you know what I mean? But we're just here to tell you, like, stick with it. Like, you are not learning your language for other people. You're learning it to, like, I don't know, everyone has their own reasons, but for me, I'm learning to become more, like, to know my culture more and to be, like, to be able to connect with more people, not so I can please someone else.
Yeah, and plus, like, it's just important to remember that listening, that's like when someone is speaking a language that you know, like incorrectly, it can sound kind of funny, you know what I mean? And like, it's like just human nature to laugh at it. Yeah. And so like some people take a little too far and can be kind of assholes about it. But like, just keep that in mind. Like people usually don't mean harm.
They usually don't mean harm.
Yeah.
But it hurts sometimes, but like they don't mean anything.
Yeah. So like, as a Goshi said, like do it for you, not for anybody else.
Also, sometimes people might be making, like, they might think you don't hear them because, like, oh, you don't think you speak the language. Maybe making fun of you.
Yeah, like, all the aunties and uncles, like, they'll say, like, oh, Ewu America, which is, it's, like, American goat, which is, like, a way of making fun of first-gen kids and stuff like that for, like, not really being Igbo enough or whatever.
Like, another good tip is to, like, learn some clever comebacks in your language next time someone does that. So, like, someone calls me Ewu America, I'm like, okay, Aturu Nigeria, which is basically like Nigerian sheep, you know, like,
yeah,
trying to, like,
ooh, farm animals.
Like, for all you Igbo kids out there, maybe don't say that to, like, your aunties and uncles.
Was he trying to get killed?
Yeah. But, like, just, like, try to, like, know how to defend yourself.
When you come at them in the language, they'll, like, totally respect you for, like, ooh, look at them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, they'll be like, okay, they'll start to, like, see that you understand things and you are, like, willing to learn this and even, like, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, you seem cool, fresh. Connect with your cultures, learn that language.
You got
it.
Do
it for you.
Yeah, you got this. We're proud of you and we're with you every step of the way.
For sure.
Yeah.
This has been
Life Skills.
Email Amaka Ingenti.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
That was Life Skills with rookie contributors Ugoshi and Ogeshi Igonu. Thanks so much, you guys.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Winona Ryder is best known for her roles in Beetlejuice, Heathers, Edward Scissorhands, Girl Interrupted, and most recently, the sci-fi horror series Stranger Things. But also, it felt so silly saying all of that because she needs no introduction. When Rookie first launched in 2011, we ran a tribute to her, and Winona very generously reached out by email just to say thank you and I support what you guys are doing. Since then, I've had the great pleasure of getting to know her, and while I was over here trying to model my high school experience off of movies she's been in, she's actually the biggest film nerd I've ever met. She's seen more movies than anyone I know and read more books than almost anyone I know. And talking to her is like everything leads to a movie reference, and I learned so much. I got inspired during our conversation for this show just by how passionate she is about the stuff she loves and how that's informed her work for the past 20 plus years. We're going to drop into the middle of our conversation. We were just talking about J.D. Salinger, who she's also an expert on, author of some of my favorite books like Catcher in the Rye and Franny and Zoe. Thinking about like my role with Rookie as I'm like no longer a teenager and like my life's become very different than it was when I was in high school. And I keep thinking about this thing that Janet Malcolm wrote in an essay about J.D. Salinger, where she says that, like, all of his, I don't mean for this to be gloom and doom, I'm just, it's interesting to me, but, like, she's, like, all of his stories and books have, are kind of have this theme that, like, only other kids can save kids. Adults can't save kids.
Yeah. He wants to catch them when they, you know, jumping off the cliff. And I always thought that was sort of, you know, Huckleberry Finn, you know, set out to the lighthouse. And then I always felt like they were almost cousins in books. Holden wanted to save all the kids.
Yeah.
And I think I had that classic thing where my dad gave me the book when I was like about 12.
Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah. And I had this incredible like personal reaction, and I felt like it was like written for me, and he was talking to me, and then the following heartbreak of finding out that everybody felt like that, that had read it. I felt like what I really responded to was that he was so full of contradictions, and he was so kind of inconsistent and in such a human way, how we all are, especially at that age. Not that we really, not that it ever changes, but I think that feeling of feeling like a ball of contradictions is really blossoming at that age, and in your teen years. And the fact that the girls in his stories, from Phoebe to Sally to Franny and Esme, like they were, I remember at that time, women, like it was, I think I talked to you about this before, but women were, it was either, especially in 18th century, 19th century literature, was like women were girls or women. There was like that in-between phase just like didn't really exist, because it was mainly male writers, and with the exception of Little Women, which is why I loved that book. But and Salinger really changed that. I mean, those girls were like all different ages, and they were so unique. And even the girls that Holden meets when he goes out, and he meets the three girls at the place, and he's like, oh, there's Gary Cooper, you know, and the one's like crazy, like they're so funny. And of course, Phoebe is like, you know, just such an Phoebe and Esme, I think, are probably two of the, and Franny, too.
Franny and Zoe was like a religious text for me.
Yeah. You know, that's how I got into acting school, was when I was 12, at this ACT in San Francisco, the American Conservatory Theater, you had to like do an audition. And I just basically read Franny and like, didn't really act it out. I just was like in a pretend like bathroom stall. And that's how I got in, you know? her whole anxiety and just everything she's going through, I feel like I've been through.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was at that age that
I'm always thinking back on when I was like 11 through maybe now in a way, but particularly like 11 through 15. And I'm like, why was I so depressed all the time? And I'm like, there was truly nothing, like there was no experience that like would have sent me, well, I mean, saying it now, I'm like, not to just like give myself therapy, but I'm like, well, there are a few, like there's a certain loss of innocence that comes with like suddenly being in an adult world or being like known in a public way, and kind of like I was thinking about, someone was mad at me because I had written, without identifying her, I had written about a conversation we had. And she felt like misrepresented, even though like it wasn't even supposed to be about her. And I was like using it to get to this larger kind of arc in what I was writing. And I was like, oh, she doesn't get that when I write about her, I'm not writing about her. Whereas like when I was a kid, I was like, oh, when these people talk about me, it's not me.
Right.
And that's kind of like a bummer, because you were like, oh, there is so much space between, there can be so much space between like two human beings.
Yeah. Wait, you mean like when people talk about you, they don't really know.
Yeah, it's like a little avatar. Yeah. It's like something that
right,
kind of...
Right, because this was sort of online.
Yeah, particularly online, on the internet.
Which
yeah.
I didn't experience, you know, I don't think... I was actually trying to remember when I first got a computer.
Yeah.
And I know I was in my 20s.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting that, like, you talk about that time and how you felt, and I feel... I felt the, sort of the same way, but there was no internet.
Right.
But I remember feeling like so misunderstood because people didn't, you know, I was picked on a lot. I had a really tough time in school socially. Weirdly, I was picked on for doing well academically.
Yeah.
Like, it's like if you did, you know.
Right.
It was so backwards to me. And economically, like, I remember people sort of, if you didn't have money, they thought you were dirty, like physically
where'd
dirty.
Where'd you grow up?
I mean, I grew up in San Francisco, and then we moved to, like, this Mendocino. It was kind of like a commune, but it was... It was more like just five families, like, living on this beautiful land. And then for my sort of – at 11, 12, we moved to this town, Petaluma, which was, like, 45 minutes north of San Francisco. But I remember being very crushed by the things people would say to me and names, you know,
like
name-calling.
Like at school,
yeah.
even not in the, like – the press.
Well, it was so different back then because there was like three magazines,
right?
You know, and I wasn't like I didn't do any interviews until I had done like five movies,
right.
And it just was so different. You really didn't have to do interviews. I mean,
did you have a sense of because the way you were describing like Salinger's characters and what they meant to you feels to me like how people like myself or just like people I know felt about movies like Heathers. That character meant something to you when you went out for the part, but did you have a sense at the time of like how much it meant for like girls who were seeing that?
Well, no, because I mean, I remember it was a very low budget movie and it was a very, you know, it was one of those movies, like the studio closed while we were making it.
Oh my gosh.
And so like we didn't even know if it was going to be released. But I do remember, and I've said this before, but I remember the audition. I remember saying to them, like, you don't have to pay me. I don't care if it even comes out. Like, I want to say these words, you know, because to me it was just, it was very profound. To me, it was like literature, and it was, there was this language, there were these references. There was so much going on, and I did feel, I did have a experience in, I was in high school, and there was a girl at my school that I didn't know that well that had been just tormented. Like, she was like a kind of a very early goth girl. Like,
yeah.
And she had killed herself. And all of a sudden, everyone was like putting on this whole act that they knew, oh, you know, like the popular girls who were tortured, who were the ones. You know, and so that had happened literally like a week before I read the script. And
whoa.
I got the script like on the, like from the guy who wrote Beetlejuice, slipped it to me. And it was like very early on, they weren't even casting. And I was like, you know, to me, it said so much about how society treats teenagers and how teenagers treat teenagers and how but it did it in this incredibly just new way. Like it was very, I'd never read anything like it. And it was, I mean, it was really one of the best experiences I've ever had. Oh. And I love the movie. I mean, it's like one of the movies I can recite it backwards and forwards. I think that writer is Dan Waters is just, I mean, I put him in the list.
Yeah.
Of, you know,
Also, one of my, like, I think there's just an interview with Kenneth Lonergan. He was like, maybe I feel compelled to write teenagers because a teenager can be a good metaphor, at least in a story, for a half-formed person, which is really just an adult.
Right.
And I feel like that...
It's a really interesting thing to say.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of how I've always felt, like, with Rookie. Like, I'm like, that seems to be why, like, people of all ages like it or something.
Yeah.
But it's like the hierarchies in high school and like the way power works in high school kind of just replicates itself in adulthood.
Oh yeah, I remember because I had this whole, I was trying so hard to get them to make like a sequel because my whole theory is like it doesn't change.
Yeah.
And I was like, if there's Heathers out there in the real world. And my whole idea was that like Veronica goes to Washington and like the first lady's a Heather and there's like, you know, like I had this whole thing and
sorry.
And but it's like it does continue. I mean, at the same time, I know a lot of people remark on that moment in Bowling for Columbine when the South Park guys say, we wish we could have told those guys, it ends.
Right.
And I do think there is something to that. Like people that are just having a horrible time in high school, you want to let them know, like, it ends.
Yeah.
You know, it does end. But at the same time, it doesn't, like, you know,
Weird. Well, you just become better at, like, you just have more tools in your toolbox for, like, dealing with it or, like, not caring or figuring out where, like, what is worth the trouble of caring.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, I remember really specifically when I was in my late teens, I never really partook in mean gossip.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first few times, like, I was the, like, I heard something about me, you know, and I, you know, getting incredibly, like, freaked out and, I mean, like, literally, like, your world is coming down because someone said something or someone did something. And then I remember I got a really good piece of advice. Someone said, unless you're in the room, you don't know what the person said or what happened.
Yeah.
And you don't know the context. And I tried to take that with me.
Has any of the stuff you liked when you were younger, like especially music-wise and film-wise, has taken on new meaning as you revisit it?
Oh, yeah. I actually, I find that like pretty much all my, well, I would say the best stuff, but I should say my favorite stuff is the stuff that you can reread or rewatch or, you know, and get something new from. And I recently did that with the Cassavetes films, and which I oddly saw when I was very young because like my mom had this projector and she had some weird connection because she went to like film school in Minnesota, and so someone was like sending her real films, so we would put up a sheet and we'd watch. So I was very young when I saw like Woman Under the Influence and Opening Night, and and but I loved them, and I don't know why, because I didn't I couldn't possibly understand, and Gloria. Then I, you know, sort of discovered them again when I was a like teenager, and you know, and then again in my 20s, and there was music that I don't know why I related to it so much, because I didn't understand. Like, there's a song, Here Comes a Regular by The Replacements, which is like completely about alcoholism. I was like, loved that song, and I never had a drink in my life. And I remember like all these songs before I was ever in love, all these songs about heartbreak, and I would love them, and then you experience what they're talking about, and then you're like, whoa.
I know,
whoa.
It's like sometimes a song is so good that it convinces you you've experienced
heartbreak. Exactly, exactly. There was a particular song that I remember, because I used to really use music a lot in my work. Like, I would listen to it and to sort of get me into a place. And there was a song called 16 Blue on this replacements album. And it was like, your age is the hardest age. Everything drags and drags. And it's like this whole thing about, and it's like, you looking funny. Well, you ain't laughing, are you? Like, it's sort of about, like, being laughed at and the lies you tell your parents. You know, just it just captured that 16, that blueness, you know? Yeah. And I would listen to it when I was doing Mermaids, like, all the time. And you know, and it would get me to, like, this place. And then, you know, there were... I did that a lot. I mean, there are certain songs that will just, you know, make me incredibly emotional.
I think you once told me, like, you saw a movie for the first time when you were 12, or, like, did I make that up?
No, because when I was little, I threw myself against the screen and was kicked out of a movie theater because it was Fantasia. I wanted to, like, get inside the movie. I didn't understand. Ugh. And, like, I hurled myself and they, like, kicked us out.
Oh, my gosh. But
I was, like, 5 or something. Whoa. But then I don't know if it – I think I started because, you know, with the sheet thing and the projector, I started watching them kind of young. But I don't know. I didn't have a TV until I was, like, 12, 13.
What was it about the movies you were watching at that age where you were just like, I want that experience?
Oh, my gosh. Like, I think there was certainly – I saw a lot of movies about justice that were – like, I remember I saw 12 Angry Men, mm-hmm. and I saw – Grapes of Wrath and To Kill a Mockingbird. And, you know, I was so – there always seemed to be, like, a kid you could kind of relate to, like a scout-type character. But I don't know. I mean, there was something about black and white movies, older movies. I do remember my mom breaking it to me that they weren't current and that, like – these actors didn't look like that anymore, and they maybe weren't even alive. And I was like, what? Like, I was just completely, I was crushed. I was in love with William Holden, and I had, you know, pictures on my, I mean, I couldn't believe, and I don't know how I didn't know that. I just didn't really... I didn't have really many friends at school. I didn't really go to – there was one movie theater that played, like, old movies. And I mean, I did see, like, Man Who Fell to Earth, and I did – so I must have – but I remember that moment when she told me, because I think it was, like, something about on the waterfront. And I was like, oh, he's – dreamy, you know, and she's like, well,
yeah.
But I think there was something, I don't know, it was just, there was something about movies that made me, they kind of sort of like Salinger, they were became sort of like my friends. Mm-hmm. And it was like how I think it was just magic. And I didn't think I could ever do that. That was very, I remember never, I wasn't one of those people who, like, wanted to be an actress, like, when I was really young. When I got into ACT, which was, like, a complete accident because I was, like, kicked out of school, it wasn't my fault.
What happened?
I was, like... Well, I was put on home study because I got beat up because I was wearing, like, this three-piece. I was obsessed with Bugsy Malone, and I was wearing, like, this thrift Salvation Army, like, three-piece 70s suit. And, like, I got beat up on like the third day of school, and they asked me just to leave. They said I was a distraction, and I didn't have – I would get all my schoolwork on Monday, and I would do it all. And my parents, bless them, because they didn't have a lot of money, but they wanted me to have friends. So they like sort of saved up, and they sent – 3 days a week I went to ACT, and they would drive. I would never have gone there because it was – it started at 3, which mm-hmm. was when school would have ended. So – and that's where like I got discovered. But I remember my first movie – which I auditioned for there. They were just like auditioning like every 12, 13-year-old girl, was Lucas. And it was like a very, like my first few movies were very like nerdy girl or, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was very at that time, very into Ruth Gordon. And I kind of, she was sort of my hero. So I really thought, oh, I do really love acting and I like mm-hmm. making movies. And maybe I could be like a, you know, a character, you know, a character actress, because at that time it was really dominated by a very different type of girl, like in terms of leading ladies. And yeah. I was just not. I mean, it's interesting in the scripts. My characters were described as unattractive. Unattractive.
That's insane.
Bespeckled. You know, it was like, but I always thought they were far more interesting, and I was quite pleased with that. And I think Heather's was a real, that was sort of the transition, because, I mean, it's like, it's kind of old news now, but like they didn't think that I was pretty enough. And I went to the mall and I went to the Macy's counter and I had them put makeup on me and I went back and, you know, and in like to the, if you watch the movie, I am sort of, I'm wearing a lot of makeup, you know, like, you know, they kind of dolled me up, and compared to the other girls, you know, I was sort of different looking, but I kind of, I liked that. I think my parents like really instilled that sort of like individualism in me, which I really appreciated. So I never felt like, I never got terribly insecure or, oh, I'm ugly or, you know, like I never got that. I was like, Ruth Gordon, you know, like that's my, that was my
goal.
Good to
be different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much.
Oh my God. Thank you. This was so fun.
That was my conversation with actress and champion of outsiderness, Winona Ryder. More Rookie when we come back. Ask a Grown started out as a feature on our website, rookiemag.com. You send us a question about crushes or teachers or the meaning of life, and a grown-up friend of Rookie answers it. This week, we have a question from a listener who's also a writer. We dug through our list of real-life grown-ups and had Ashley C. Ford answer this one. Ashley is a senior features writer at Refinery29. She's written or guest-edited for The Guardian, Elle, BuzzFeed, Lenny, and so many more, and she's also currently writing a memoir, so she's fully qualified to answer this question. This question is from Ursula, 18, in Toronto, and I have to say we get this one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A hearty hello to all of you at Rookie. I live to write, and for my newest story, I have come up with three main characters who I am absolutely in love with. All three of them are people of color. It occurred to me that I wasn't sure how people feel about white writers, like myself, writing about people of color without being one. My intentions are not to offend, but to bring some much-needed diversity to the literary world. What is your opinion on this topic?
I personally think that people who are trying to tell stories that are in any way reflective of the real world have to have people of color in them. Like, unless you're writing about the Klan, I guess. If you're writing some sort of Klan love story, I guess it doesn't have to have any people of color in it. But if you're writing about the real world in any real way, people of color are necessary because we're here everywhere and all the time. So I think what you're going to have to do if you're writing people of color is you're going to have to work on making sure that their voices come across authentically, because even though people of color absolutely want to see representation of ourselves in media, we don't want pandering. We don't want people who, you know, slap brown skin on a white character, you know, and say, well, now his name is Jamal and everything is beautiful and diverse. It's like, do some research, do your job. As a writer, it's not just your job to tell stories, it's your job to tell good stories. And it's your job, you know, especially if you are a part of, you know, the power majority. And you are looking to write about, you know, people who are traditionally oppressed or marginalized, yes, you have to do some reading. You have to do some research. You have to definitely read some books that already have people of color in them and make sure that they're books that people of color actually read. Mm-hmm. That would give you a hint that this person or this writer has gotten it right or done it right. There's also, and you know, people feel different ways about this, but there are people who you can reach out to be sensitivity readers. You know, if you're not sure you're writing about someone or a specific experience or whatever that you're not familiar with, if you're not sure that you're writing it correctly, like, there's really nothing wrong with reaching out to people in the writing community. Hopefully your writing community is diverse, so you can reach out to them and say, hey, I'm trying to write this character and I just want to make sure I'm not saying or doing anything offensive. And some people will be like, you know, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that. But every once in a while there's somebody who's like, yes, I can help you with that, I'd love to help you with that. And don't be offended by people who don't want to help with that, because it is labor and it's exhausting. And be really grateful to the person who does want to help you with that. But if you can, try to make sure that you're, again, writing and in community with a diverse amount of people, because that will help your perspectives. It's really hard to write about what you don't know, even when you're making it up. So it's going to be work. And if you're committed to the work, then I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with you doing that work.
That, I hope that that helps Ursula and the other people that we've gotten that kind of question from.
I hope so too. It's tricky. Mm-hmm. It's very tricky. And I think a lot of people, you know, are so scared of getting it wrong that they won't try.
Yeah.
So there's already something, you know, like, special about the fact that you even want to try. Mm-hmm. The question is, you know, will you follow through on your commitment to writing that character? And if you can follow through on that commitment and do your due diligence as a writer and as a storyteller, I think your writing will be better for it. Like, don't worry about us and our gratitude. Like, that's really, like, not the point. The point is you will be a better writer because you learned how to do this.
That was writer and editor Ashley C. Ford answering a question from Ursula from Toronto. If you want some advice, email your question to youaskedit@rookiemag.com, followed with your first name or nickname, your age, and your location. That's youaskedit@rookiemag.com. youaskedit@rookiemag.com. And if you'd like to hear your voice on the Rookie podcast, you can record yourself on your phone or computer asking your question, but keep it to about a minute long and email it to us at podcast@rookiemag.com. That's the show. You can subscribe to the Rookie Podcast on Apple Podcasts and find us at rookiemag.com, rookie.mtv.com, and at rookiemag on Twitter and Instagram. I, your host, Tavi, am on Twitter and Instagram at TaviTulle, TaviTulle. Plus, check out podcasts.mtv.com and at mtvpodcasts on Twitter and Instagram for more shows from the MTV Podcast Network.
This episode of Rookie was produced by Mukta Mohan, Michael Catano, Kasia Mihailovich, and James T. Green for the MTV Podcast Network. Thanks to Lauren Redding for making the Rookie podcast happen, and to Lena Singer for picking advice questions. Thanks to Maria Inez Gull for the portraits and doodles, to Cynthia Merhedge for Rookie's logo, to Hattie Stewart for the logo doodles, and to Beth Heckel for the Jules.